In this ASI cast, we're taking a look at how Russians viewed this World Cup summer of football and some of the problems and particular challenges that were overcome to measure the total audience to this event. Richard Marks, our research director, talks to Ksenia Achkosova, TV audience research director at Mediascope, and to Ivan Ugrimov, the company's head of specialised projects. They'll be presenting a more detailed account at this year's November conference in Athens.
Well, welcome to the podcast, guys. Now, when I spoke to Ksenia back in May, I think it was, you weren't particularly optimistic about the Russian team's chances, and you felt that as a result, perhaps the viewing levels in Russia for the World Cup might be a bit disappointing. However, against all the odds, Russia got to the quarterfinals in a glorious run. Did that lead to World Cup fever amongst Russian viewers?
Yes, Richard, you are absolutely true. Interest to sports in general in Russia is not that high. But World Cup would change situation dramatically for all aspects. And it was a real festive event in Russia. Many people who knew nothing about football at all became football fans. We had a lot of fan zones and everything, and people in the streets were watching football a lot. And I can give you an example. In winter, according to our research, football was sports number three. And of course, during the event, it became number one, and it still keeps its very high position. And obviously, the success of our team was played a significant role in all this. Frankly speaking, no one believed at the very beginning that our team could reach a quarter final, but somehow we made it.
Well, I remember the first match, everyone was a bit shocked because largely we had believed what all the international football experts were telling us, that this was the worst Russian team for 30 years or whatever. And then they went and easily won their first match and got out of their group fairly easily. So it was there is a theory, I think FIFA subscribed to it, that it's in the interests of the tournament that the host team does well, because when it doesn't do well, it feels a bit flat in the country itself. Certainly from your perspective, how did people consume the event in Russia? What broadcast rights were there? Who was broadcasting it? How much was it shown on TV? Which channels was it shown on?
So on the Russian market, three channels bought the rights for the broadcasts in Russia. It was Channel 1, Channel Russia 1, and our sports channel Match TV. And the championship, the Cup of 2018, was the first cup when all the 64 plays were broadcasted live on national TV channels. Besides that, on Match TV, there were more than 100 of replays. So they showed the games in the they showed the repeats of the game. And the main media to watch the broadcast was TV, but during the championship we saw a lot of people who said that they watched these games live in the internet, and there was a lot of different places which our people said that they used to watch the games. They watched there not only at home, but in bars, in cafes, even at transport, because we had a special event for the championship in Moscow metro, in Moscow subway. There were live broadcasts of all games of the championship.
How did that work? Were they actually broadcast in the trains or on the platform?
Yeah. They implement the screens inside the trains. In each cab, there were a screen, and you have a possibility to watch the game when you on your walk for work or just...
Yeah. So how was the signal getting into the... Because I've been on the Moscow Underground. It's quite far underground. How did they get the... signal? Is it Wi-Fi, or how is it actually getting into the carriages, the actual broadcast?
Yeah, it was a Wi-Fi connection. At the moment, we have a very good quality of the Wi-Fi signal in our subway.
Mm. And was it audio and sat? Did you actually get the video and the audio? Or was it video with the audio muted?
No, it was only video.
Oh, interesting. Because that would have had research implications for things like audio meters if that was being used to measure.
It was only video.
Talking about special measures, when you were preparing to measure the World Cup, did you, Mediascope, need to put any special plans in place in order to be able to cover it across platforms? How much preparation did you need to put into it yourself?
Yes, of course, we had to make a lot of preparations, but as you probably know, we have media syndicates for all types of media, so we're currently measuring TV, digital, print and radio, so we didn't have to do any special preparations in this context, but we ran special surveys, and Ivan would explain in more details what exactly we did.
Because of we have to measure all the second screens and all the different places of viewing the broadcasts, we ran the separate research. It was day after recall research and after all games of Russian team and after final game, we made a day after recall and ask people about which screens they used to follow the broadcasts, where they do that, and which kind of advertising careers they remember, and so on and so forth. So we all five games of Russian team and the final game and the championship in total. We have an information about all the second screens and structure of viewing in different places.
So were you able to tie that back to the people meter panel and give a total figure then?
Yeah, it was about viewing.
Okay, so presumably that will be some of the results from that is what you'll be sharing with us at the event in Athens, the overall viewing across screens and how the event actually worked.
So for the cross screen and to estimate multimedia figures, we made a fusion of these data, and in this special ad hoc research, we had media questions to prepare it for fusion with our media syndicate projects. So it was possible to calculate the total figures for each broadcast in different media, in different places, and so on.
Well, that'd be fascinating to see. Roughly, what is the total viewing universe in Russia in terms of people with TV sets? The big figure that all your results potentially are weighted into.
It's most of the all Russians population. It's close to the whole Russian population. It's about 140 million individual.
Because I think one of the it was interesting World Cup because I think a lot of people are agreed that it helped dispel some of the myths people may have about life in Russia. But certainly, we appreciated it was a lot hotter in some regions of Russia than we ever imagined from the feedback from the pitch. But the other thing, obviously, is the number of time zones. What implications did that have? Because I think some of the games, obviously, it was a trade-off with FIFA as to when the matches kicked off to get the biggest global audience. But that would have been skewed a bit towards Western European audiences. Presumably, some of the people to the east were potentially having to watch games in the small hours of the morning. Did you notice any differences across the country as a whole?
Yes, of course, because Russia now has 11 time zones. Mm. And obviously when it's 5 p.m. in Moscow, it's early morning in Vladivostok or other Far East regions. But nevertheless, this Championship had the biggest viewing figures ever for all previous football events. It's on average, it's more than 9 hours per individual, even for those individuals who never watched TV set. Of course, this figure differs for different regions, and the highest viewing levels we have for southern part of Russia, for whatever reason. But even in the Far East, the total viewing time of football is more than 5 hours. And if we're speaking about some matches in particular, we can say that, for example, Spain-Russia match, which was broadcasted at midnight Vladivostok time, got rating of 19.19. So 20% of Vladivostok population were not only not sleeping, but they were watching TV. And another example is Russia-Croatia game, which was broadcasted in Vladivostok at 4 a.m. and it has rating of 15. So, of course, Far East figures are significantly lower than for European parts of Russia, but nevertheless, they had extremely high levels of viewing.
Interesting. There's a certain similarity between the Russian team and the English team in the World Cup in that neither of them were expected to do particularly well, and both ended up exceeding expectations. It makes you wonder whether, in some ways, that is a better thing for getting people excited when you actually go into a tournament with low expectations than when you go in, you know, like Germany or Spain as the favourites, where chances are you're going to be disappointed. Do you think that had Russia gone out fairly early, that the interest would have kept going, or was that a fundamental part, the feeling of patriotism around the Russian team's performance?
Surely the very high level of the viewing is related to the success of the Russian team, but the whole preparation of the championship in Russia, and especially in cities which held the championship games, was very high, and the whole population expected some kind of big party, like a very big festival, or I don't know how to say. And their expectations of the Russian population were successed.
Mm. So it sounds like it would have been a hit even if Russia hadn't done well, but Russia doing well did push it to being a bit of a phenomenon by the sound of it, that became a bit of a national event. And now at the event in Athens, you're going to be talking not just about the total TV audiences to the event, but also the work you did around segmenting football fans and also looking at sponsorship placement, the effectiveness, and even social media activity around the tournament. Obviously, I don't want to preempt the whole paper, but as a football obsessive myself, can you give us any teasers about how the football fan segmentation works?
Yes, sure. For us it was quite pleasant to know that during the championship, whole population become very interested in football, and all the social media, all the internet websites, which are about sports, they became for example, all the sport websites, they became more female than they are usually, because either women or men, they started to be very interested in football. And regarding our football segmentation, we made it for the whole population from 12 to 64, and now we know that we have 20% in our population who are highly involved into all football events, either in Russia or in World Championship, and we know that the most part of highly involved football fans are interested in content via social media, via internet websites, and they prefer to watch the games very often. They say that they are contacted with football 6 or 7 times a week, and they use their second screens like smartphones, tablets, to watch the game in each place they are in at the moment. And their income level is higher than in general in our population. We had a lot of another interesting facts about football fans. I think that we will prepare something special for our conference, for our speech on the RC.
I'll definitely be looking forward to that. Just as a final thought, I know FIFA do make a big play about the impact that the World Cup has, that in theory that hosting a World Cup will, in the long term, stimulate football in that country and also revive the infrastructure because of the investment that goes into building stadiums and so on. Is there any, it's early days, but is there any evidence so far whether the interest in football will continue, or the increased interest in football? And I guess also, have you got plans in place as to what you're going to do with the wonderful new stadiums and the improved stadium? Because I know in Brazil, they did have a big issue that a lot of the stadiums that they built for the Rio World Cup are now not really used. They're almost built just for that World Cup. What planning's gone into the aftermath of the World Cup?
We know about Brazil problems, and we are sure, we hope that our government and other guys, our sports ministry, will find the proper way to use all these buildings of the stadiums and so on. As far as you know, we will hold 3 or 4 games during the Euro 2020.
Yeah.
So some of our stadiums will be used there, and also we have rather big our national championship called Russian Premier League, and we have a lot of teams there, and a lot of stadiums are used to hold the national championship games. Maybe some problems will be with our stadium in Kaliningrad, because they have no their local football team, and it's a little bit far from the other part of Russia. Mm. But they have a possibility to host some concerts or something like this there. So maybe some Western music bands will take place there.
That'd be interesting.
I can add something. For example, we built a lot of new sports buildings for the Olympic Games in Sochi, and now they're successfully used, not only for sports. Of course, sports is the main way of using these buildings, but some of them are used for musical concerts or just for big meetings or whatever. So we believe that somehow all these buildings and investments would be utilized and used for future.
Yeah, it's good to plan those things ahead, because I know that one of the stadia in Brazil that was in the Amazon jungle, to your point, was built nowhere near a particular football club, and is now actually being used as a station for parking lorries and coaches on the pitch. So it's great that you're planning ahead on that. I'd also forgotten, of course, that the European Championships in 2020 aren't in one particular country, of course. They're going to be spread across, the matches are going to be spread across Europe, which will be an interesting marketing challenge, because normally these big football events are very much about, Russia 2018 or Rio 2014, whereas at the European Championships, it's just going to be across Europe. So that'd be interesting to see. Anyway, I'll let you get on. So thanks very much for your time. We're very much looking forward to your paper, which the two of you will be kicking off the session I'm chairing and we'll hear a bit more of a deeper dive into some of those figures, and also hear a lot more about football fans, social media, and the sponsorship around the event. So thanks for making the time to speak to us today.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, Richard. Thank you.